Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon
myself. Yep, that's me.
Emmett. Good evening, John. And as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 087-179-1032. That's also the WhatsApp number as well. So text or WhatsApp us on 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. Lots to get through as usual, and as usual, we'll start with what to see in the night sky.
Yes, well, just a reminder that the space station, that's our International Space Station, is back in the evening skies on March the 17th, which is St. Patrick's Day, which is a Friday this year.
Yeah, so that's nearly rising. You could see it tomorrow at 5:30, but a little early for most of us, I think.
Most of it, yeah. Mercury is hidden in the deep sunrise at the moment, so not seeable or watchable or anythingable. Now, these two were fascinating, or have been fascinating me over the last week or so, as they draw closer and closer and closer and even closer. That's Venus and Jupiter. They are the two brightest planets at the moment. They shine boldly in the west-southwest at dusk, and I did see both of them this evening. It was quite clear. An odd cloud or two out this evening, but nothing to much worry about. Venus is the brighter one and the lower one, and they're at -3.9 and -2.1 respectively. Now, just to give you an idea, they are drawing closer together every single day, and I did watch from last night. I noticed that immensely. So on Friday, at last, they were 12 degrees apart and closing fast, and on the 24th, they're only going to be 5 degrees apart, so they're on their way to a close conjunction on March the 1st. So
Wednesday, if you look, they'll be half a degree apart, which is about the diameter of the moon, or the sun.
That's about it. And
about a moon's width apart.
So watch out for that if you get some clear skies. I'll be watching for it as well, because it's good fun to watch. But I did remarkably closer than they were this time last week. And March the 1st, they're going to be the closest to just half a degree apart. So, telescopically, Venus is just a shimmering little gibbous ball. And it's remarkable because stars don't really shine. You know, they don't wobble. Or planets, they don't wobble. But Venus does because of the atmospherics. And it's so bright as well. So, just keep an eye out for that one. And it's the dimming of some of the other ones. Mars and Taurus shines. Now, this is very good to watch as well. It's a very, very orangey high towards the south right after dusk. And it's almost overhead if you haven't seen Mars yet. It moves lower towards the west as evening grows late. And it continues to fade. And I've noticed this as well, that it's only +0.2 to +0.3 this week. So it's still very much seeable and virtually overhead and is orangey. And it's not going to show you any visual details in most telescopes at this stage. Most nights, probably from its gibbous shape, and 90% sunlit. So it's not really full facing our little thing, so our little planet here. So there's the other one, Aldebaran. Is that the way you pronounce that one?
Aldebaran,
whatever it is. +0.8, it's a bright one. It's just below Mars in the early evening, and later in the evening lower on the left of Mars. So watch out for that. Too bright. There's a bright star called Aldebaran. a real tongue twister, that one. Saturn is out of sight in conjunction with the Sun just at the moment, so you don't get a chance to see that. Uranus is a magnitude 5.8, which is very, very dim in southern Aries, and it's still fairly high in the southwest right after dark. Very difficult to see. Neptune, unfortunately, is out of sight after the afterglow of sunset. So you've only got a few to watch, but they're fascinating. Venus, Jupiter and Mars, they're the three to watch. And if you have your binoculars, you've got Uranus as well.
Thank you, John, for that. And, of course, we have the moon, which, from our vantage point here in Dublin, set about half an hour ago, or 35 minutes ago. But it will rise again tomorrow morning at 8:39 a.m. It'll be a very thin crescent. You'd want to be Very lucky to catch that. 6% waxing crescent. Yeah, but that's after the sunrise, so actually you won't see it. You might see it tomorrow evening. But anyway, it will be due south by 20 to 3 in the afternoon. At that stage, it will have risen to 8% of a crescent. And when it sets tomorrow at 9 o'clock, or 1 minute past 9 here from Dumbleton, it will be 9%, very thin crescent. So around about sunset, just after, if you have a clear sky and a clear horizon, that's a nice little challenge.
Mm.
It shouldn't be too, 9% should be. If you get, conditions are right, you should have no problem finding that. And of course it will get larger and larger, the phase, until, well, we'll have the first quarter moon. That will be next Monday, the 27th, at 8 a.m. in the morning, to be precise. Meanwhile, the sun will rise in Dublin tomorrow at 7:29 a.m., which is a whole 14 minutes earlier than a week ago. Local noon, when the sun is due south, will be at 12:38 p.m., and then the sun sets at 5:48 p.m., which is 13 minutes later than a week ago, and also 13 minutes later than a week ago, we'll have civil twilight ending at about 25 past 6, and then nautical twilight ending at just after 7 p.m., and astronomical twilight ending at night beginning at 7:45 p.m. tomorrow. So all in all, 28 minutes more daylight than we had a week ago. We'll have another 4 minutes and 7 seconds tomorrow between sunrise and sunset than we had today. And tomorrow the time difference between sunrise and sunset will be 10 hours and 20 minutes. So that's the grand stretch in the evenings, and indeed the grand stretch in the mornings. Now I notice when my alarm goes off, it's not quite as dark as it was only a few weeks ago.
Yeah, if you're a Jupiter watcher, just forgot to mention there that if you want to see the red spot, the 21st, which is this evening, you would have got to see it for about half an hour at 20 to 6. The 23rd is the next time really of its place of advantage, is 7:19 p.m. That's in 2 days' time. And then again on the 25th at 8:58. So if you want to watch or see the great spot with binoculars or a telescope, that's the time to watch it there. Now, I see that Russia is expected to launch a rescue ship to the ISS on February the 24th, and that seems to be official at this stage, and the launch is expected from, says the spokesperson from the Roscosmos Space Agency. Last Monday, the space agency said it had delayed the launch of the Soyuz MS-23 spacecraft, saying a supply ship docked at the ISS had leaked a little bit of coolant as well. So they're looking like, and more likely, that they are going to launch at just after midnight, just half past 12 on February the 24th. So we won't get to see that really, will we?
No, I don't think so. No, then it'll chase the ISS.
Yep, indeed.
And
it'll
be launched from, as far as I know, Kazakhstan. So that's, as you mentioned there, John, the Soyuz MS-23, but the previous one, the MS-22, flew the Russian cosmonauts Dmitry Petelin and Sergei Prokofiev and the NASA astronaut Frank Rubio to the ISS back in September, and they were scheduled to return home. But when the coolant leaking was discovered back in mid-December, they put that on hold, and I think it was hit by a little tiny space rock. And as you mentioned, that launch from Monday was postponed after another vessel, which was the Progress MS-21, had also leaked the coolant. So they're just waiting to go ahead. It's more or less confirmed for the 24th. I think it's just to be rubber stamped by certain authorities in Russia. Now, speaking of launches, I see SpaceX may get into a little bit of trouble over their launch with the United States Federal Aviation Administration, or the FAA as they call it, because the FAA, have proposed a $175,000 civil penalty to SpaceX, they say, for failing to submit launch collision launch collision analysis trajectory data directly to the FAA before their launch of its Falcon 9 rocket back in August 2022. That rocket carried a lot of Starlink satellites and, of course, was launched from Cape Canaveral in Florida. Now, according to federal regulations, the data must be submitted at least 7 days before the launch, and the FAA, they regulate commercial spaceflight in the United States, and they're in charge of licensing all domestic and international launches and re-entries in the United States. And according to the FAA, they say, quote, launch collision analysis trajectory data is used to assess the probability of the launch vehicle colliding with one of the thousands of tracked objects orbiting the Earth, end quote. And SpaceX has 30 days to respond to that letter that they got from the FAA.
I wonder if they've paid that bill, because last Friday, or last, when was the 17th? It was Friday. They launched another 51 Starlink satellites from California in the Space Force base in the Vandenberg one. So there's another one. So
Well, I presume they would have known. They learned their lesson if they're, mm-hmm. if they are potentially, could be, I suppose, fined. It doesn't say that they didn't have the data, that they just didn't submit it. I presume they did an analysis of when you launch something as to whether there's a chance of it hitting something.
Is that four penalty points off your license on that one?
Your launch license, uh-huh. Yes, indeed. I'd say more than that, and $175,000 fine, which is not a whole lot of money for a big corporation like SpaceX.
Yeah, just some trivia about the Starlink satellites. They orbit at about 341 miles above the Earth's surface, which gives them a slight advantage over the geosynchronous communication satellites that orbit tens of thousands of miles above the Earth. And the low Earth orbit reduces latency. That's the time, because the signals can reach Starlink satellites more quickly than the geosynchronous ones. I wonder how much time delay difference.
Speed of light, fraction of a second. Milliseconds, microseconds.
Maybe it's important, maybe it isn't.
I think it is. Might be with GPS and...
I wonder.
Trading on the... I did read something a long time ago, something got to do with astronomy now, but about if you could even... data going back and forth from North America to Europe about markets and trading and stocks and shares and equities, if you could... And if you had the computing power, if you could intercept the data even a few milliseconds before somebody else, you could buy or sell at the right time and make a lot of money. So I suppose it's important from that point of view. But this is the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032, and you can also catch us on the World Wide Web, dublincityfm.ie, and also as a podcast.
Now, last Wednesday, the 15th, wasn't particularly a close shave, but still, in all, it is and was an asteroid. It was known as a sizable space rock, and it made its closest approach to Earth in four centuries, last Wednesday, the 15th of February. Nothing to fear at all. Well, at this stage, we don't have to worry about, because nothing happened. The near-Earth asteroid 2005 YY-128 zoomed within 2.8 million miles from our planet. And it just shows you, I think there's a lot more concentration on the amount of asteroids that are out there looming in. And the biggest, one of the biggest worries are the ones that are coming in from the sun, straight from the direction of the sun, like the Chelyabinsk one. So I'll go into that in a few moments' time. Last week, we had a big flare in our skies, which was pinpointed in and around over the English Channel, and a fragment of a meteorite that exploded over the channel was recovered in France. And it was last, when was the mass Monday, and due to its size, it didn't pose a threat, but it was visible. And I saw the photographs of this and the videos of dash cams and everything as well. So really remarkable to see this, but most remarkable also to find a chunk of this particular meteorite. and it was found by members of the French search group Fripon Vigie Ciel.
Very good.
And that was in the field of Saint-Pierre-le-Vigier.
Yeah, I believe it was a 1 meter wide asteroid, and which was seen from southern England and Wales, and presumably even Paris, I believe, northern France. But it was tracked down. I suppose we have enough CCTV and dash cam and things like that, and you can, from different, if you can track the trajectory or direction from various vantage points, it's a little bit of simple trigonometry.
And also the weird thing about this,
more or less where it
came in from the direction of the sun as well, and it was only discovered a couple of hours before slamming into the Earth as well, so it just zoomed in undetected.
So it's there's a launch plan, actually it's in about 7 years' time in 2030 in Neomir, but we'll go into that maybe some other time. It's essentially to look for incoming asteroids. If they're coming in from the sun, as you mentioned, you can't see them, but this probe will be out at one of the Lagrange points, basically at an angle, looking at it from a different perspective, and it'll be able to spot a large asteroids coming our way, but that we wouldn't be able to see from here if they're very close to the sun. But we'll go into that maybe next week.
I think we're in a little bit to what was that at the moment, whereas what will it be? So a little bit of luck now, we might be able to detect these, and hopefully there aren't too many more biggies coming into our atmosphere.
That asteroid and the meteorite that landed in France, it was only discovered coming in on the 13th of February, and
right,
it was actually found on the 15th.
Yeah.
So they were very quick off the mark, and it was only discovered about 7 hours before impact, when a guy in Hungary spotted it. He was searching for it. Well, this is what this guy does. His name is Christian Sarzneski. And he's a guy who's keen to be looking for NEOs or near-Earth objects. And he said, apparently this is the seventh time that an asteroid has been discovered before entering the Earth's atmosphere, and the most recent one before that was 4 hours before it hit the Earth back in November of 2022, when it came in over Toronto, Canada. So, we just don't know where they're coming from.
No.
Maybe we should go back to, did you see that picture of last week? We mentioned it last week, the big meteorite that landed in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
There was a beautiful photograph of it online. Lying on the snow,
on
the ice.
Thing just lying on the ice. And, of course, the ice was so hard, I suppose, it didn't have time to melt in, and it was 7 kilos of a meteorite. That's when that comes hurtling towards you, you do not want to be in the way of that.
Actually, they used the Copernicus Sentinel 2 data to plot a course for it. A Belgian team went there and to hunt it down. In fact, they picked up 5 or 7 meteorites on their trip, and as we mentioned last week about the continent's dry environment, limits the degree of weathering that the meteorites can undergo. And of course, as we mentioned, they're also normally easy to spot on an icy, bright, white backdrop. And you see something dark and a big rock on top of the ice, which in some parts of Antarctica is over 1.5 kilometers thick. Saying, well, where did that come from? That didn't.
Yeah, no, funny
it didn't
enough,
grow there.
No, it definitely did not. It wasn't. Remember the Chelyabinsk meteor? That's 10 years ago, almost to the date now, about 5 days ago, on February the 15th, 2013. They were busy preparing for the TV segment for NASA on the flyby of a near-Earth asteroid, 2012 DA14. And this was expected to zoom within 17,200 miles of the Earth. But during this prep work, Paul Chodas, who was in charge of all this, was sent a YouTube clip of a large fireball exploding in the skies over Chelyabinsk. And this was a city in the Ural region of Russia. So Chodas was skeptical at first. Initially, he thought there was a bit of confusion that people involved got the prediction wrong. But it was a different one altogether. So they were watching something else, which was going to be...
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, there was something They knew something else was coming in around about that time, but
yeah,
a different one from a different direction.
Yeah, this one was 18 meters across and exploded into the skies. And I'm watching, I'm looking at photographs I printed earlier on of all the damage, a lot of the damage that it did as well. It knocked buildings apart and blew shutters and doors and windows and hurt 1,200 people. So they reckon the initial explosion was estimated to be between 300 and 400 kilotons, which is not quite as much as the warhead dropped on Nagasaki during World War II. So it was...
Thank goodness it was actually, exploded higher up.
Much, much higher up, and must have been amazing to see them. That was a what was that, definitely. So,
yeah, just going back briefly to Antarctica, I see there's been 45,000 meteorites recovered from Antarctica in the past 100 years or so, but only about 100 or so of them have been as big or as heavy as that one the other day, the 7.5 kilogram rock.
Yeah, now, just slipping up to Mars, because we don't really talk much about Mars, because they're just doing their bits and pieces, moving here, there and everywhere, and doing a couple of flights with the little helicopter there as well. But the Mars rover has found ripple rocks caused by waves, showing that there might have been or should have been surprise clues to the Mars' watery past. And this is always coming up every few weeks now at this stage. But if you look at some of the photographs that have been posted to the dried mud flats to possible hematite spherules, Curiosity is now at the moment uncovering the diverse geology of Mars as it works away on Sol 3720, just half that. And you get that in how many days it's been there. So, or double that. There we go.
Okay, speaking of Mars...
Mm-hmm.
I see a new impact crater has been discovered. When they say new impact crater, it means that it's usually actually discovered by the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that's continually monitoring the planet as it orbits, taking photographs, and then it comes around again and says, well, that crater wasn't there last time we were here. But there is a new crater discovered about 35 meters in diameter, which makes it about the 16th largest new crater found on Mars. And as I said, by new, we mean there they have before and after images, which are usually acquired by the MROs, what they call the context camera. And there are many other new craters formed up to a kilometer away from this crater. And these usually appear as secondary craters. I think they are secondary craters produced by the main 25-meter crater and are probably more like primary craters resulting from fragmentation of that boloid or meteoroid that came in over the Martian atmosphere. And, of course, there'd be more craters here on Earth if we didn't. The thing about Mars is, of course, it has a very thin atmosphere and there's less chance of anything burning up on its way in, whereas at least we have a bit of an atmosphere to protect us. But it won't protect us if there's a huge thing the size of a mountain coming.
No, it was... No, let's not pray for that as well. Good evening, Alan. Thank you for your texts. And not too rainy and cloudy, Kildare, at the moment to sample any of these celestial bodies about which we speak, so it must be a little bit cloudier down there. And I did see Venus and Jupiter earlier on. And nice to know you're listening. Send us a text. 087-179-1032.
Text or WhatsApp.
Let us know where you are.
Or
around the planet. It doesn't matter really at all.
Anywhere in the universe.
Yes, indeed. It doesn't matter.
Write to us anytime on astronomy@dublincityfm.ie.
Now, sticking just with asteroids as well. It's really asteroid evening this evening. The planetary radar captures detailed view of an oblong asteroid, and there's a collage in the paperwork in the, well, it's not paperwork in the internet, but it shows six planetary radar observations a day after the asteroid made its close approach on February the 3rd. So it's always interesting to see these. It looks like a lemon without one end being sharp. You know, lemons usually have sort of two ends being sharp. And that's what it looks like at the moment. So this one is called 2011 AG5. and it's impacting our planet, and we've been watching it for quite a long time now, and it's one of the 1,040 near-Earth objects observed by the planetary radar to date. So that's what that planetary radar system does. It just keeps an eye on the near-Earth objects, which would possibly cause a little bit of damage if any came our way. What would we do if we suddenly saw one of these? Is there something in place to get there? That's the big, big question. And just staying with that just for the moment, the orbiting observatory known as the NEOMIR will act as an early warning system, as you probably mentioned a little bit out further.
Yes, I thought we leave it till next week. But
yeah, well, no, I think we can just take a note. I'll just put a dog ear on the corner of the page and that will go into that. But it's, as I say, they're whizzing it out to the Lagrange point so they can find these risky asteroids.
Yes. That maybe have we any time for one more item?
We're very close. A lot of people are asking me about buying telescopes at the moment. I might call our telescope expert one of these days, Stephen, to come in and just talk, because I have a pal who has just bought a Newtonian one, and he was doing a lot of research on this one, and the Smith-Cassegrain that I have is the one for me, because it's short and 8 inches. This one, you view from the top of the tube, which makes it easier viewing. And he's...
It does for high up objects, yeah.
Yep, and especially for planets and things like that. But he's been taking photographs using his iPhone.
Yeah.
And he got the Orion Nebula, which he sent me the other day, which is it's remarkable to see it. It's all the colours that appear that we don't see with the naked eye, as we would call it here, and human versions. So the camera catches all sorts of different colours.
So I wonder, difficult to photograph the moon seems to be difficult enough to do.
I don't really have a problem with that, because funny enough, I have one of these Nikon cameras that has a huge zoom lens, a 2,000 millimeter zoom, and you can pick things right out, and it does its own thing. Now, photographing the full moon is slightly different. You need it with the Terminator in the middle of it.
We get someone. I know someone who might come in and talk to us.
We certainly do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, thank you for that and for your news item. Don't forget, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items and for driving the sound desk this evening, and to the people who put this program up as a podcast from wherever you get your podcasts. And that's the good people here in Dublin City FM. And also to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon, who put it up on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock. Threads with Bren Lynott at 11 p.m. Ear to the Globe with Nigel Woods with his World Music Mix. And then from midnight till 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry with After Hours with his mix of jazz, blues, and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.